This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
All right, let's get you the NFL news of the day here, Christmas Eve style, TD Tuesday style, coming up 3 hours from right now. Looking forward to that. It's the Will Chambers Power Hour, doing us a great service here.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas to you, brother.
This is my early Santa-looking attire, actually. Although I do agree, I couldn't hear at the time, that I look like I'm counseling, like, the underprivileged.
Yeah, at-risk youth,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
Custody battle you're going through right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on in. Take a seat. Take a load off.
That's right. Take a load off, ladies and gentlemen. It is a great day, holiday wise. Everything is fun. Will's about to head off to a church service after this. Then hitting dinner
after. So
the Christmas traditions, man. It's beautiful. I feel weird because I'm not getting to attend a Christmas Eve church service right now.
This is as weird of a year as it gets for, like, when you have Christmas Day on a Wednesday. That's just bizarre.
Yeah. Middle of the week.
Everything's thrown off. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And Jerry this morning talking about, like, it really doesn't matter anymore. Whatever day Christmas is on, we're going to be playing some NFL football.
Oh, they're going to play some football.
So,
yeah.
If it's a Tuesday, because Tuesday and Wednesday,
whether we're sending guys to trauma centers or not, we're playing some football on Christmas Day, buddy.
That's exactly right. So, yeah, man, NFL news of the day here. Let's go ahead and jump right into it. We have another gift opportunity to show some love. Packers running back. Packers just absolutely dominate the Saints last night.
They did.
That was a good 12-minute in real time watch when I got home, and then, like, okay, we don't need to do this, honey. Let's watch something else.
So let me ask you guys this, and I know we've been having fun with it, and we were just kind of joking about it in the break here that, like, Bobby and that Philadelphia caller, I think he only had one clip in between, Lucius, but I was like, that wasn't too dissimilar. Where I think anybody that is a fan of a team would get frustrated is, okay, can you win with this? Can you be okay? Yeah, but are we going anywhere? Like, I look at the Packers and LaFleur, you're like, okay, that's a team, that's a program, that's a coach that can take you ultimately there.
Difference makers?
Coaches that are difference makers.
I'm a big
believer in that.
See, that's where I'm at. And I think that there's, when you get down to, and I just was always kind of wondering, how many coaches in this league do you think are difference makers?
Yeah.
Obviously, Bill Belichick, for the majority of his career, was a difference maker.
You know,
Bill Walsh, difference maker. You know, Tom Landry, difference maker. You know, that's where I think that you've got guys that can coach in this league and are really good as regular season coaches. And then something happens when they get on the big stage, then they play another difference maker, and that takes them out.
And that's where I'll defend Bobby a little bit as to where his frustration comes in, because you're like, and I'm not saying that I see it the way that he does. I'm saying I get where the frustration is when you see, if you go through a hiring cycle and you go, like, what are we really doing here? Why are these other people chosen instead? So you're, and that goes back on the franchise. But yeah, I look at the Kevin O'Connell. You know, one of the things that I think is really important too, that you can win with a CEO style head coach like Dan Campbell, right? Mm-hmm. Dan Campbell's terrific. How good are they going to be offensively the next couple of years or few years after Ben Johnson is gone?
Right.
That's what makes it really difficult. Instead of having a team that has Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, Andy Reid. By the way, those three coaches have coached more games than anybody in the NFL over the course of the last 5+ years. Because why? They're coaching way more playoff games.
Deep into the postseason.
See, this is where Dan Campbell and them, if say they do go to the Super Bowl this year and win it, and they start to lose assistance, this is what happened to Dallas Cowboys in the early 90s. When they had,
this is what's happening to the Niners right now.
Yeah.
Philadelphia has not been back since Shane Steichen left.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. You could start to lose assistance, but you need somebody in the building that's able to identify. And that's one of the things I prided myself on when I was working in pro personnel and around the league, is that I knew who all the young assistant coaches were. I had a list of guys that like I had.
Well, you're working with quite a tree yourself.
That's
at
what
that
I'm saying.
One point.
Well, at Green Bay, we had a great one. And so to me, I always had that list of guys that if we lost a line coach, I knew where to go get the next line coach. Maybe there was one in the pros. Maybe there was an assistant in the pros, an assistant line coach. Maybe there was one in college football we needed to interview. You know, I think you have to have lists ready, and you have to have that prep because
people love lists. Man.
Honest, their teams don't do this. By the way,
I can't speak for them.
They recycle.
I just know. I've had teams call me before, other guys I know around the league, and like, hey, who do you like as a running back coach? And I would honestly ask this question: you need a black guy or a white guy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I mean that's how it kind of went down.
That's how it started.
That's how it kind of, you know, but it was sometimes staffs have to, you know, they want to
like
make
dynamic
sure.
of locker
yeah,
rooms.
Yeah. Dynamics of locker rooms. You know, I mean, it's not nothing offensive, I hope, there or anything, but that's guys would ask that.
Well, that's how it goes.
That's how they, you know, because we want to have your staff to have balance, you know, and it's, I know it's probably sounds crazy, but that's teams really look at that.
Well, I just think that LaFleur does such a good job that's kind of what you're looking for. And I think that's where you get frustrated if we've seen the 12-5,
yeah,
but it still wasn't good enough. Now, again, I'm projecting out, you know, some thoughts and feelings out there. I don't really know for sure how I feel about Mike, because I look at this year and go, how do you put it on him?
It's not about this year, Will. It's about the last 3 years when you were a 12-win team and you were spoon-fed great opportunities, especially last year, versus the youngest team in all of football at home. There's no reason not to get to the NFC Championship game. Or at the very least, just win the first game. Look competent. Look like you've been there before.
Yeah,
that's the reason.
When a team as a collective lets you down, we have to look at one source, and it goes to the head coach. So I get it. Fair or not with that. But I don't know what was the dynamic leading into the Packers, you know, not to make it a whole thing on, you know, Cowboys-Packers from the playoff game, because it was symptomatic of what we saw 2 years prior, you know, when they faced San Francisco. But it really came to a head, it felt like, in that playoff game last year. Is Mike to blame for that? I mean, partially, mostly, I don't know. That stuff for inside the room.
I you know what, and I got yelled at by Will McClay about this. Because I was like, my questions were about Dan Quinn. You know, you had not seen, they had a bad day at the office.
Mm-hmm.
They had a really bad day at the office. Green Bay was ready to play. Dallas wasn't ready to play. You could talk about McCarthy and all that. Maybe the players, maybe the fact it's 2-7. But, you know, Will McClay, you know, he's like, listen, you know, you should know better than to go after Dan Quinn. You know, and I'm like, well, Dan Quinn did get an interview and didn't get a job shortly after that. You know, was he prepping for this opportunity? Where, you know, it's just human nature. When mm-hmm. you're thinking about your job and your next, you know, potentially your next job.
How much checkout is there?
Well, not checkout, but how much attention to detail like that. That was we had not seen a Dan Quinn defense look that bad.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I guess we could say maybe the game against Buffalo.
Yeah, the Buffalo game.
They got run on. They got run on. But we haven't seen a game where they completely were busting assignments. And so you wonder about the game prep, you know, and it was just a question. We're all human, but when we're trying mm-hmm. to get, you know, we have an opportunity. Hey, I got an interview for this job, but wait a minute, I have to get this team through the playoffs. This is what I always hated about the fact that the league and the, you know, how they allowed guys to get interviewed. And I'm like, man, we're screwed here. because our coaches are interviewing for jobs when we're trying to win playoff games.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it very similar to the transfer portal, that we've got to come up with a system that starts after the year, is after the Super Bowl, after the national championship game for some of this, because, yeah, you could do that, and then that's part of the defense, and then Dak sailing the ball, just looking really nervy all over the place. And it just seemed like from the first few seconds of the first quarter that it fell apart. So again, it's easy, I think, to point the blame at the head coach. And as, you know, somebody would say, well, it does, you know, the buck hole stops with me with all that. So it's a really difficult thing to determine. But, you know, Cheech, going back to watching the Packers last night, and they're playing a lowly Saints team. But we've seen the Packers coming on now. You know,
the Packers, they're a real threat.
You know, some of these teams, they reset like that. We thought that the Rams were going to be down for at least two years, right? At least?
Yeah.
They're down one.
Yeah.
And back in the playoffs. You know, San Francisco's got a tough road here because they were a little bit different with paying a lot of their guys, older guys, guys that are under contract. That's going to take a lot more maneuvering. But if there's anybody else that's going to get a turnaround real quick, it's Kyle Shanahan. Do we think that Mike McCarthy does that here in Dallas? I don't. And I don't think it's his fault either, because the personnel is what it is as well.
Well, you have the news now that Ben Johnson is expected to interview for the Bears head coaching vacancy. Yeah. A couple of weeks ago, reports emerged that Ben Johnson will only take interviews for jobs he is willing to accept. So for Chicago,
I did that last year, right?
Yeah, just get out of your own way, Chicago. Just open it up and say, hey, what do you want? You can have it. Don't screw this up,
yeah,
Bears. This is your chance.
Brian, this is one where, because you know these people, I mean, not personally, but you know how it's done, that I can sit here, you and I very easily can just sit here, lay back, and go like, it's Ben Johnson, it's the right call.
Yeah.
But even like, say, with a Kevin O'Connell, you want to go offense, I believe it's going offense is the right thing with Caleb, but they need to be a guy that can be the coach of the team, not just the offense. You know, you can run the offense, but be the coach of the team, because that's what Kevin O'Connell is. That's what Sean McVay is. Is Ben Johnson, only they will be able to figure that out. But I think that that's really, really important, because as the head guy, you got to be able to handle it. You know, Matt Nagy looked good.
Year one, right?
Year one, but being as a coordinator
as
too, right?
Yeah.
You have other guys so that's what they've got to make sure of. I think it's the right hire there. I'd sure like to get Robert Saleh on the defensive side.
Yeah.
If I'm looking for a DC anywhere, that's the first call I'm making.
If I'm Ben Johnson, I'm asking, how the hell are we getting offensive linemen here? That's the first question I'm at. I'm interviewing him. I'm interviewing him, you know, Poles, those guys, the GM. I mean, the president. I'm interviewing all these guys. Listen,
they're getting it wrong over and over and over again.
Well, how are we evaluating these guys? Why all of a sudden did we have to just get all skill, and you guys didn't think did you guys not watch this in Detroit, what we were doing in Detroit when we're adding all those first and second round offensive linemen? I mean, that's the way that, you know, look what's going on in Philadelphia. You know,
when you say offensive line coach is big, I was talking with Nate Newton about this a couple weeks ago. Yeah.
Huge. Yeah, Todd Archer and I have had this discussion many a day, and Todd Archer starts to talk about, he's like, listen, he goes, when you start to think about offensive line coaches and the importance of where they are on the staff, you can say offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator,
offensive line coach.
Offensive line coach is huge because of the number of players that he affects and the way it affects your team.
I mean, Bill Callahan comes to mind as, you know, one of the greatest, you know, and that, I mean, the teams
that
were
good
so
here.
Good. Yeah.
Tony Wise, Hudson Hauk. They've had some great line coaches here, you know, and there's no reason why not. I mean, you look at the line coaches and how they were able to navigate that in the early 90s here.
That's what we're seeing right now as how good these teams are, or like say Kansas City keeps winning, but they're a little bit shaky because they've been shaky on the offensive line.
Yeah.
Detroit, for all the injuries they've had, continue to win. Why? They haven't had the injuries on the offensive line.
Yeah.
And this is where I think you're also seeing, and this isn't a shot at you, I'm not trying to stir it, but the element of the running back and the running game and how important it has been that the best teams that we're seeing now can effectively run the football, even though it's like having a great defense. We talk about in college football, like the last few years, like how great Georgia has been on defense. Well, you know, C.J. Stroud absolutely carved him up, and Stetson Bennett had to bring him back. To get to the party, you've got to have a great defense. I think with the NFL right now, to get to the party, you're going to have a good running game. You're going to have to be able to run the football somewhat effectively and then have your quarterback stealing first downs here and there, because that's why I think Kansas City continually, you know, shows that they can win and why they're so great and why, like what you were saying, how important it is to get that right, especially with the quarterback you've got in front of him or behind him.
Yeah, no, I agree with everything you say. I mean, now in terms of how you build out your rushing attack and what you prioritize, I think is the question here. You have a guy pulling the strings from an offensive line coach, OC standpoint, where it's expansive, it's nuanced, it's you know, it's versatile in terms of you're not just, hey, we're an inside zone running team. Like Detroit is a pick your poison kind of, whatever your front looks like, we've got a run play that can work for it. We have creativity and nuance within our, the way that we're attacking it. You see with Kyle Shanahan, of course, yeah, all these things where you, they don't
these
have
are
just
good franchises, they don't, right? Yeah. We're talking about good franchises here. You know who picks up Mike McCarthy if he, you know, doesn't get renewed? The Bears. Yeah. That's the kind of thing that they do. The Packers don't do that. The 49ers don't do that. You've got the Chiefs don't do that. You know, it looks like the turnaround, even with maybe a new coach in New England, is right about there with Drake May. You know,
yeah,
these are good franchises that it starts from the top down. Now, you can be a solid franchise like the Cowboys have been, but is it one that is going to get you a Super Bowl? Bobby is only portraying the exact anger that Zach Wolchuk feels, that every other Cowboys fan feels, because they are so tired of this crap. And we can sit here up here all day long and be like, well, 12, and it's true, but you're like, okay, what is going to make the difference? What is going to get the different type of mentality in there? Because it just has not worked for more than a quarter century. Mm.
By the way, Ian Rappaport saying Jerod Mayo expected to return as Patriots head coach for next season, barring a total collapse in the final 2 weeks. So,
okay,
for whatever that means there. You have the, I can't believe the Niners extending their streak. Have you guys seen this?
No.
22 seasons now that they've been eliminated from the playoffs officially. It's 22 seasons of either missing the playoffs or
going to the championship game.
You get to the NFC championship game.
Yeah.
That's for the last 22 years for Niners fans. You're either missing the playoffs or you're getting to the conference title game.
Wow.
Now, obviously, they haven't won a Super Bowl in that time. They've been to a couple, handful.
The last one they won was 94, right before the Cowboys.
Exactly. Yeah. So their Super Bowl winning drought is actually longer than the Cowboys.
Yeah. And but they've been the championship game.
But yeah, just the idea that,
and
just
a couple Super Bowls.
Yeah.
A few Super Bowls.
Yeah. But the idea that for the last 22 years, you've either been missing the playoffs or you've been getting to the conference
funny?
Title game. That's just hilarious.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, Shanahan took over for Harbaugh, right? Those are two damn good coaches that you've had the last, whatever it is, 15 years.
Yeah. Oh, no question. Yeah, they got it right.
When did we get Chip Kelly and Jim Tom Sula? And
that might have been.
That was Nolan. It was Nolan.
Yeah, Mike Nolan had
Tom
Jim
Sula,
Tom Sula.
And then Chip
then
Kelly.
Then it was Harbaugh, right?
Then Harbaugh.
Yeah.
Then they go from Harbaugh to Shanahan.
Okay.
That's what they did.
I think so.
That's impressive stuff right there. Will's on fire, says the 214. Yes, he is. Will Chambers in here for the Power Hour. We'll bring in college football Carter Freeman for a little college football playoff roundtable next right here on the...
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Football fans, do you want to hear the whole unadulterated truth about where your team stands?
It's the most embarrassing film I have ever watched in my entire life.
Former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth gives his perspective on the top storylines and games on a weekly basis on the Stinkin' Truth Podcast.
You may get out of here with two sacks and a tackle for loss, but you're getting out with a bloody nose.
New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday.
It's going to be a street fight.
Make sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Fan. Darius Slay from the 806. That's getting it done.
Can I throw a Dylan Gabriel in there? How about a Michael Mistletoe and Holly. This one was a stretch. Leon, Let It Snow.
I like what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're playing a slightly different game with that. Yeah, no, but I like what you're doing right
there.
You see
what he's doing? He's trying to extend the game by adding words to the name.
The Holly one.
I don't think we've got to that point yet. I really don't.
Right,
I think
but
we're still
Holly
cooking.
Is still okay.
Yeah, you're still good, bro.
I'm still good with Michael.
Yeah. I seen a Wilma Rudolph on the fan text. I thought that was brilliant.
Oh, Wilma Rudolph.
That is good. That is a good one.
Let's ding that for sure. All right, the G-Bag Nation here.
Run.
It's the College Football Playoff Roundtable. Will Chambers in all hour long on a Christmas Eve TD Tuesday. We have college football Carter Freeman hanging out as well. Let's see if we can get these two to come to blows college football style. Segment's brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car or truck wreck, call Frankel first. 214-333-3333 with Frankel & Frankel. There is never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. Frankel & Frankel, the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. Segment also brought to you by Ciroc Vodka and Cars for Kids. Donate today at carsforkids.org.
I don't think we had... Did we have a disagreement last weekend?
I was going to say, Will and I think, see pretty eye to eye on how most of this stuff goes down. You said...
Or should go down.
You said Indiana was going to win. I told
Indiana
you that
was
wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
I said SMU had a chance to win. I was clearly wrong about that. So we both...
I swept Saturday. But start on Friday night was not a good one.
Credit to Will. He was trying to talk me out of my... underplay and taking Clemson with the points, and they both got botched.
And that was the one game I figured would be high scoring because I thought Texas was going to win by 30, and it ended up being closer, but it ended up being the highest scoring of any of those games.
It really didn't go down quite the way that I thought, because at times that offense for Clemson really struggled and took football back about 40 years, it felt like, with what should be a really good quarterback. And Cade was, I thought he was sensational.
He got better as the game went along. Yeah. That's something we talked about yesterday.
That first drive, I'm like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
That the Texas defense is on alert here. Mm-hmm. And then it started to get away from him. But like you said, by the end, Klubnik was playing out of his mind. And I was asking Carter this yesterday, like, are you feeling better about, if you're a Texas fan, do you have some concern about the way the defense played there moving forward now? Obviously, ASU, and they're a huge favorite. 13.5 point favorite versus Arizona State for the
Chick-fil-A
Peach Bowl.
You know, I think the concern for Texas fans was going into that game on how offensively in Quinn. You know, they scored a touchdown on their first three possessions. They didn't do that all year. In fact, I don't think they scored a touchdown on their first two possessions at any point this year.
So Texas fans should be more fired up about the offense than being like side
eye
in the D.
Like I was saying before, remember how like you got to have a good defense to get to the party. They have, it's them and Ohio State, whichever one you want to choose. Those are the two best defenses in the country.
I've already looked at a bunch of college players from Ohio State that are defensive tackles, edge rushers, Sawyer, those guys.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got some legitimate defense front seven dudes.
Yeah, and so, Caleb Downs is arguably, you know, the best, you know, safety probably
he's got another
in college
year
football.
In college, right?
Yeah, I think Ohio State. They're
starts
a little...
with like a word with you at Georgia. Malachi starts.
Yeah.
And depending on what you do with the kid from Texas too. Texas got a safety that's.
Makaba?
No, the other one.
The other one.
Number seven. Oh, geez.
Oh, Barron?
Barron, yeah.
Barron. Yeah. They're, oh, he's going to be a top... Is he the top 10
he'll
pick?
He'll be a first rounder. I don't know if he'll be top 10.
Okay.
But he'll probably be a first rounder.
Because I have not seen the Texas kid play. I have not seen him on film play yet. But, I mean, I know one thing...
Yeah, the Jim Thorpe winner. Jade Barron. Yeah.
Yeah. Starks is a big time player for Georgia. And you know, and you're now kind of trying to find, you know, you're trying to find those dudes that can play the coverage, of course, can play down, line up. I mean, you know, it's like the Brian Branches at Detroit. That's what everybody's kind of looking for now. These two guys are very similar to that.
Carter, do you like the way Texas is favored in the Peach Bowl here? I mean, 13.5.
Yeah, it's a big number, but I think it's fair. I think it's tough looking at Clemson because they were the lowest seed and they deserve to be the lowest seed, but it's still Clemson. And even though they don't take a whole lot of, in fact, they didn't take any transfer talent up until this current cycle, during this current open transfer portal we have now, Clemson finally got transfer players coming to their school. So even with that being said, what Dabo has done with building that program, keeping them competitive, not at a national championship level anymore, I still think that team is probably more talented on the whole than Arizona State. So Arizona State's all about Cam Scataboo, mm-hmm. the running back. Sam Levitt, their quarterback, had a very good season. Their receivers are young and solid, and the defense has done enough to help them win the Big 12 this year. But there's no unit on anywhere on Arizona State that you say that's better than what Texas has.
I think you have
Texas
to,
run D is unbelievable.
Yeah, that's going to be it. So what did we see with every team that won? Ohio State kind of flipped it a little bit because it started with their passing game, but all of them won at the line of scrimmage and all of them were able to run the ball effectively. And I think that that's where Texas, that was the biggest takeaway there, because I was listening to you guys last week and when Brian had brought up, you know, going with Arch Manning.
Yeah.
I would say, I think that they are a more dynamic offense with Arch Manning, but I think that you got to play both of them. Like, don't upset the apple cart by going and starting Arch and all that, to see him play a little bit more, because I still have issues with, you know, Quinn doesn't have many ways to throw the football. I hypothetically texted Zach last week. I don't know if he asked you, Brian, or not. But if I said, okay, you've got a quarterback that, one, does not throw with anticipation.
Yeah.
Two, only has one pitch, and it's not really a soft, or it's not a fastball.
Right.
He has that, like, kind of, he just kind of flicks it down the field, almost like a floater. He doesn't really drive it.
Right.
If you just knew that, like, what kind of grade, like, where would they go? He said third day, but, yeah. I mean.
Yeah, see, I mean, the NFL, the problem that you deal with the NFL is if you're a floater, they drive on the ball, man. These corners
safeties
and
are safeties get it,
are,
yeah.
and linebackers are too good. You know, if you've got to get the ball, because everything we talk about nowadays is what? Tight window throws.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you're giving secondary a chance to drive on these guys, and I'm not saying you have to throw it through people to, you know, but you can't be a floater and be, you know, now, I've seen some guys do it and get away. The Cooper Rush is a floater.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Cooper Rush isn't going to drive it through. The guy he played the other day, you know.
If you're Baker a floater, you're going to get flushed.
Yeah, I agree.
It's a good way to put it. Winners get washed, floaters get flushed.
Yeah, and that's my biggest concern for Texas. But if they're able to run the ball, this ain't going to be close.
Yeah.
Okay, so you like Texas to cover the 13.5. Oh, that's yeah. the vibe right now. Just, okay. We still got time. We still got time.
Yeah. Just looking at the run defense numbers for Clemson versus Arizona State, Clemson's ranked around 60th in the country. They're allowing around 150 rushing yards a game. That clearly showed Texas was able to run all over them. Arizona State's ranked 22nd. They allow about 35 less rushing yards a game than Clemson has, but yeah, I still don't think it's going to make that much of a difference.
This is my question for you college football experts here. What did Texas State do to Arizona State that only this kid had 24 carries for 62 yards? What did Texas Tech do to him that he had 18 carries for 60 yards?
Texas Tech, it got away with him. It got away from him real quick. I didn't see what Texas State did, but I watched.
I mean, they won the game. They won the game 31-28. Arizona State did.
And this is their third and fourth game of the season, right?
Yeah,
these are early season games for Scataboo.
He came off. He rushed 30 the week before. He had 33 carries for 252. Against Mississippi State.
This was one from my memory, because these are the only two games.
What did Kansas State do that made him 25 for 73?
Well, he only had two games in which he ran for under five a carry, and it was Texas Tech and...
Kansas State, it's 2.9.
I'm sorry, I have it backwards. In the two losses, he was under five a carry.
Yeah, that's it. Texas Tech was 2.9. Texas Tech was 3.3. The game they won against Texas State, which I think they had to come back in... I mean, matter of fact, Arizona State traveled to down to San Marcos. Mm-hmm. 2.6. This guy had 24 carries for 62 yards in that game. I need to watch that game.
Yeah,
I need to figure out what happened.
My memory on that one is being lost in the mix and lost in the play calling. Like, when we look at the end, like, do an autopsy of a game, like Ohio State, Michigan, for one, it's like, wait, what? How many targets did Jeremiah Smith and Amika Igbuka get?
Yeah.
That's not anywhere near enough.
Ohio State flipped that at the very beginning of their game against Tennessee.
They
figured it out, but we all knew.
And that's where you go, it's another thing, like we were talking about coaching before. How much of it do you put on? I get Ryan Day is going to get all of it, but my brother-in-law is a huge Ohio State fan. He's there at the game on the field, and I'm texting him during the game, like, How badly do you want to go punch Chip Kelly? I mean, and he's like, everybody here is talking about it. Now, they were worried about Will Howard because he may have gotten a little hurt. It was windy. He looked awful. I get it. But sometimes they just get lost in the sauce, I feel like, and play calling. And it, you know, I would have asked Ryan Day afterwards what the game plan was against Ohio State, because they certainly figured it out. And he said they went opposite of
against
that.
Tennessee. Oh, you said Ohio State.
Ohio State. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's where, from my memory, when it came to like the Tech Arizona State thing, was just that he was kind of lost in the shuffle and wasn't breaking off any runs.
Okay. And like that game, it looks like to me, because, well, that was a 30-22 game. That's not one of your traditional Texas Tech games where it's 58-34, something like that. But I need to go back and watch and see if I can get a hold of that Texas State game, because I'm curious what they did, because he came off a previous week of rushing for 262 against Mississippi State. Mississippi State's bad football. Play bad football right now.
And I'll tell you, too, with Scataboo, he is not a big guy. He's a tough guy.
Yeah.
And if you give him a few yards and you're trying to hit him in space, you're going to bounce
he's
off.
He's going to shed the tackles.
But if you're clogging up, you know, the lane and he's not getting any momentum, then he can be brought down.
Yeah. Before the playoffs started, did you guys have a champion prediction?
Yeah, I want to change it.
I don't. I picked Oregon season. Yeah. I picked him to beat Georgia, and I still think that's a real possibility. Even without Carson Beck, who he's been ruled out for the entire playoff for Georgia, I still think that team is good enough. What they showed me beating Texas coming back without Beck, except for that final play where everyone knew they were going to run the ball, and you know they brought Carson Beck in for that for some reason.
That game with Notre Dame is going to be fascinating. But
because Stockton had his face taken off.
That's
on the
right,
play
the play before, and he had
to
come out.
He was shaking up. I can't believe he didn't blow his knee out either with the way he fell.
I'm really fascinated to watch him because, I mean, he was a big-time recruit. He was a freshman, an All-American as a freshman in high school. Five-star, like two,
he can run
24/7 Sports had him as their like number one dual threat guy. Who knows with that? My pick was Oregon. Oregon went through, they played their entire Big Ten schedule continuously, without a bye. All in success. You're like, okay, I don't care who you are. That's tough, or like who you're playing in that. They've been the best on both sides of the ball, like Carter was saying, but you know, these teams, we have to look at them a bit on a bell curve, right? Like, what can you be at your best? Like Carter was saying with Georgia. I watched Alabama in front of my face in your house, which is one of the greatest experiences of my life. Yeah. That was amazing.
At Broadus's?
At Baton Rouge.
Oh.
At Tiger Stadium.
Yeah, and they were, LSU was awful that night.
And Alabama looked like you could not beat Alabama. If they played like that or the way they did against the, you know, in the first half against Georgia. If Ohio State plays like they did against Tennessee, nobody will touch them. That is still the roster that's $25 million. If they get adequate quarterback play from Will Howard, and that's how it looks, Tennessee's defense is really good. And that front seven, front eight, which is really about their front 15, how many guys do they recycle through that? It's incredibly deep.
Yeah.
It made no difference.
Well, here's the difference. Dan Lanning, difference maker.
He is. I totally agree.
Ryan Day, maybe not a difference
maybe
maker.
Maybe not.
But to Ohio State's credit, they didn't get blown out by Oregon when they lost to him in the regular season.
No,
that
not
was
at
a
all.
Close,
no, no,
close
no, not
game.
At all. Not so, at all. It's great tape to watch because of the number of players on both sides that are draft eligible.
Yeah, Will had a great day.
Until the
final
very
play,
end. Yeah. Other than that, he was awesome. But Oregon's just boring. They're the most boring 13-0 team we've had in the last, I don't know, couple years. So people don't want to give them the credit I think they deserve. But I think we'll see that in the Rose Bowl. Like, you are going to see just how fundamentally sound every player on that defense, on
and
that
tenacious.
Offense is.
They're super tenacious.
Hit hard.
I know this is probably close to home for you, but does Oregon has the quarterback advantage here, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, both these dudes were Big 12 quarterbacks, right, at one point in time in their life?
Dylan is, in my estimation, on a way different tier. Will Howard has been sketching me all year, and then watching him against Michigan, it was pretty bad. Now, it got a lot better, but he's getting to Jeremiah Smith, Amika Igbuka, you know, even, you know, Travion Henderson, running back, they're getting it to him in space, you know.
Yeah, a lot of space. That was something I noticed in the Tennessee game is a lot of their guys had so much room in front of them. And that was a sound Tennessee defense the entire year, and they finally managed to cook them the entire way. But Gabriel's just like the rest of the Oregon team. He's not super, like, exciting to watch. He just gets the job done. And if he needs to bomb it 60 yards down the field, he can, but they can dink and dunk your way to beating you.
Yeah. I don't know if this kid's declared yet, but I watched this Evan Stewart.
I was just going to say his name. He was the one that had the big game against Ohio State.
Yeah,
he's super fast.
He's a transfer from Texas A&M. He's a Frisco kid. But yeah, keep an eye on him. I watched him thinking he might come out. I don't think he's declared yet.
No. He probably does. Yeah. Tez Johnson, I believe, is a senior. He's kind of the leader. Okay. But
yeah, because he came back.
He reminds me of Jordan Addison. He was at USC. Oh, he was with the Vikings.
That's a year he's having right now for the Vikings.
Yeah, that's the kind of player he is.
All right, there it is, your college football roundtable. Thank you, Carter Freeman. Will Chambers sticks around for one more. Krusty's Corner on a Christmas Eve TD Tuesday, brought to you by Reliant Heating and Air.
I'm glad Will's here. We're going to have some questions for him about this Dallas Cowboy team. We'll do that next.
6'8", Tree Rollins, former Atlanta Hawk. Nice work, 6'8", yeah. Chuck Cooperstein, radio voice of the Dallas Mavericks.
That's not one, is it?
No, it's not. I don't think Chuck Cooperstein.
How about Jesse Holly?
Jesse Holly. That deserves a ding right there.
Can't believe I didn't get that after Michael.
Yeah.
Should have gone Jesse first.
Did you and Jesse work together?
Uh-uh. We just missed each other.
That was, who is he working with?
Ari?
No, the movie studio girl guy.
Oh, Dingus.
Mike Dingus. That's who he was working with.
Shout out Mike Dingus.
Man, I miss him, bro. He used to drop off them coupons to go watch a movie anytime.
No kidding.
Used to hook it up.
I used to walk away with a stack of them boys.
That's insane.
I miss you, dog.
It's like he wouldn't give you just one or two. He'd give you like, here you go, man. Enjoy a movie.
Yeah.
And like you could go a whole year with the number of coupons.
Love it, man.
Yeah, he's the man. Love us some Mike Dingus. Love us some Chuck Cooperstein. Joins us in 12 minutes. Radio voice of the Mavericks. We'll talk a little Mavs victory from last night, and then, of course, look ahead, a little Christmas Day action with the man himself, Chuck Cooperstein. Right now, though, we turn it over to the Super Bowl champion, the King of the Krusties, brought to you by Reliant Heating and Air. It's Krusty's Corner.
Thank you very much, Chief. Thank you very much to Reliant. Happy holidays to everybody out there, and happy Hanukkah and whatever else you celebrate out there. All right, Will Chambers, since you're in with us today, I have questions. I need answers. Will?
How do you feel about your questions today, by the way? You confident?
I feel like this is going to make you think a little bit.
You're not mailing it in on a Christmas Eve?
No, I'm trying my best. I always try my best. It just doesn't always work out my best.
Yeah, well said. Okay. Amen.
Thank you.
You got a Sean Connery quote that's just floating around my head right now. Yeah. Anyway.
I'm just kind of missing that you said you were going to bring in some of your mom's Italian bread for the holiday.
Oh, that's Thursday. I'm getting it tomorrow at Christmas. Thursday,
really?
I'll bring it in.
Oh, man. I was just throwing a Hail Mary there.
I have a hilarious text.
I know she's got a million things going on right there.
Your mom does.
That Christmas bread is incredible.
Yeah, it's dominant.
That will wreck a diet.
It will.
But it's some of the best.
Like swing by here on Thursday.
Yeah, we need to get a Will Chambers Power Hour.
We can definitely do that again.
Thursday
especially
and
we're talking
Friday.
About Christmas bread.
Yeah, no, his mom. Oof, tell you, it's great. All right, Will. Hey, did Brock Hoffman struggle with Vita Vea change your thoughts about him being a full-time starter at guard?
No. Look, not to try to cop out or just to cheat on basically all of this, I think my whole theory on the Cowboys has been that they're four guys away from being four guys away. I mean, I think we've seen some good out of Hoffman, but right now we need, you know, able bodies in there. The departures that left last year, if you don't agree, or you do agree, like, yeah, I wouldn't have brought them back. I didn't want to pay for Tony Pollard. I didn't want to do this, that. That's fine. But they didn't replace him. Coming into the season, I had huge questions in two areas, depth and the running back room, which is like, I'm not trying to be Mr. Running Back Advocate here, but you got to at least have something in there. And Dowdle, who I like, is injured a lot. And then they just didn't replace a lot of these guys. So I know that it's been a little bit makeshift with your situations on the offensive line. But one, Vita Vea is terrific. And two, I mean, if you're going to get somebody else to replace him to have depth there, I don't know. I think that you need so many guys at this point that looking at what he did on, you know, against Tampa, I'm not going to take anything away from him. Right.
Yeah, so you're not. How about you, Eric? Are you looking at it as maybe not the starter dude, and maybe he needs to play center and not guard, and maybe we need to see BB play a little guard? I mean, how do you feel about this? Did it change a little bit for you?
It does.
And you got two big time teams defensive tackle wise. You're playing these next 2 weeks.
Yeah,
I mean Philadelphia and the Commanders. It could kind of maybe, I don't know. Does that influence you that maybe he's not the guy.
Yeah, these final three games we were looking at, we discussed it plenty on, like, this is going to be the real test now.
Yeah.
He's done a nice job versus some poor fronts, some poor run defenses. The whole offensive line has.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was like, okay, this final three-game stretch here, you're going to run into some guys, especially Vita Vea the other night. You're going to get Jalen Carter and company, the big dogs there, interior with the Eagles next week. And that was going to be the real sort of determining factor of, has Hoffman really broken through here, mm-hmm. or is he just beaten up on bad teams like the Cowboys love to do? And so he failed this test. Like, he was not good the other night.
Yeah.
And he went up against a super beast for sure.
Sure.
But if you're going to be, if I'm going to pen you in as a starter going into next year, mm-hmm. I got to see you at least win some of those individual matchups in a game like that. And he didn't at all. It was a tough watching Hoffman. So yes, I do. I'm not going to rule out the idea that he could compete for a starting job next season,
right.
But after a game like that,
he's a depth guy. I mean, this is an undrafted, you know, how long does it take to figure out a guy on the offensive line? You know, you're going to give a first round draft pick, you know, definitely 2 years. But if we're talking about somebody, you know, that's just that's playing right now,
mm-hmm.
does it take more than 2 years to figure out what you've got in the building in that area?
Will, I got another question for you here. For the skilled guys, has Turpin replaced Ferguson as your third most important piece of your offense? Lamb and Dowdle would be the other two, in my opinion. But has Turpin replaced Ferguson as your third most important offensive weapon?
No. I would say no, because we all know that he's dangerous, and we've all been clamoring for them to figure out a way to get him the ball in mm-hmm. space. Well, I saw him lined up in the backfield. Correct me if I'm wrong here. That didn't happen before, right? Like at the running back position where he was seven behind?
Yeah, they did it versus the Panthers, was when they first unveiled that. And
I was
it
like,
worked.
I don't remember seeing that.
Yeah.
But I'm like, why couldn't they figure out other ways to get him the ball, you know, from the slot or, you know, some of those? We couldn't understand it. But I think that Ferguson, your tight end, your starting tight end, is going to be more important than, I think, your third wide receiver, and that is pretty much what he is.
I do think that it's been a bummer that the Cowboys haven't been able to get more out of both of these guys this year. No. Of course, the quarterback stuff plays a factor in just the offense being so bad for the first 10 weeks or whatever of the season, but I feel like Kevontae Turpin in different settings could be a real legitimate player. Jake Ferguson at the tight end spot. We saw what he did last year. We know what he's capable of.
Right.
Both of them, I think, were leaving meat on the bone here. But as currently constructed, I do think Turpin's more important.
As a weapon, as a third weapon. Yeah,
definitely. I mean, they have no speed whatsoever. I mean, Scooney filled in for Ferguson. It was like he didn't even notice Ferguson was gone. This version of Ferguson. Yeah. Last year's Ferguson, we've been missing all season long. But this version of Ferguson hasn't been overly dynamic, and it's not all his fault, but when he was out with the concussion, Scooney comes in and it's like, okay, he's getting it done. There's no replacing that Turpin speed in the game.
Right, he's the only guy on the field that if there's a breath of air, he can be gone.
Yeah.
He's the only guy on the team that can do it.
All right, can I get one more question? Or you want to?
No, let's just be quick. I don't want to keep Chuck Cooperstein waiting.
You got it. Okay, Will. Jordan Lewis is your defensive MVP this season.
Yeah, I would agree. Micah missed so much of it, and Jordan Lewis, who has, look, some of the guys that, based on the position they play, are going to be a little bit unsung. I'm going to start, like, all offseason being Mr. Middle Linebacker guy. Get ready for that.
Yeah.
Because I think that position has gotten so undervalued, and sometimes like a nickel guy, or one that plays down and plays dirty like he does, it's tough. I would agree.
Yeah, I do think he deserves all the love. This is no disparaging on Jordan Lewis. He's had an amazing season. But Micah Parsons, the on-off splits, we ran the numbers yesterday.
Overshown
for sure. Did a lot and deserves some credit. But Micah Parsons, with him on the field, they make quarterbacks.
He's no question the best player, no doubt.
They make quarterbacks look like Daniel Jones from a success rate standpoint when he's on the field this year. When he's off the field, the quarterbacks have a success rate that's equal to Josh Allen this season, 49%. It is an unbelievable difference. Micah Parsons has been a monster.
We talk about, Woody. And the career he had and how he didn't have the numbers and all this stuff. And I'm not saying that, you know, he's a Hall of Famer. I'm just saying that sometimes there are guys' positions on the team, and especially the defense, that just you don't feel like you know the impact that they truly have made. And Jordan's one of those guys.
Will Chambers, ladies
love
and gentlemen,
guys.
Merry Christmas. Love you more.
Happy
Thanks
holidays,
for the time.
Guys.
Happy holidays, you will.
Hopefully we'll get Will Chambers back in the mix on a Thirsty Thursday, maybe a Football Friday as well.
You know you got me for a Thirsty Thursday.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. He'll bring the whiskey and everything. It'll be great. All right, Chuck Cooperstein, radio voice of the Mavericks, joins us next here in the Nation.